The following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
And we say welcome in to Commodore Hour on this cool yet nice Monday in the Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Kevin Ingram. Great to have you with us. Coming up over the next hour, some good guests for you. Of course, Coach Jerry Stackhouse will have a couple segments with Stack. With the Commodores busy again this week, facing Auburn tomorrow night off a tough loss at Georgia back on Saturday. So we'll visit with Jerry here in just a couple minutes. Also, sophomore forward Dylan DeSue out of Pflugerville, Texas, second leading rebounder in the SEC, 7 straight double-figure games for Dylan. He will be our guest a little bit later this hour. And to finish up, we're going to have James Threlkill, a Vanderbilt football alum and just a really neat guy. He is a Nashville guy through and through. He'll talk about the Black and Gold Club and just his career as an artist and what he has meant to the university. So looking forward to visiting with James a bit later on in the show. A little bit on what's going on. We mentioned basketball, 5-9, 1-7 in the SEC with Auburn coming to town tomorrow night. Pregame 7 o'clock, tip-off at 7:30 over at Memorial Gym. 73-70 was the final back on Saturday. It was a tough one. Vanderbilt rallied to tie, had a chance to win at the end. It was close pretty much the whole way, but a block by Tumani Camaro and a drive by Scottie Pippen Jr. When Vanderbilt had a chance to go in front in the final seconds. Had a lot of good things happen, though. 15 steals, 29 points off 21 Georgia turnovers. Had 4 players in double figures, led by DeSue with 15 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 blocks. So a lot of good to take away from that game in Athens, and the Commodores will try it tomorrow night against the Auburn Tigers over at Memorial. Better lace up those sneakers. That'll be another up-tempo game with a lot of three-pointers, I have a feeling. Want to say congratulations as well to the 2 members of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that are from Vanderbilt. Talking about Shelton Quarles and Keyshawn Vaughn, they will both get Super Bowl rings with the Bucs win over Kansas City last night, 31-9 for Tampa Bay's second Lombardi Trophy. Shelton, of course, was part of the Super Bowl winner back in 2003 when he played. These days, the director of football operations for the Bucs, and of course, Keyshawn Vaughn from right here in Nashville, a 2020 Vandy alum and a rookie with Tampa Bay, and he will be a world champion. He is a world champion in his first season in the NFL. Congrats, too, to Kansas City's Emmanuel Smith. He was part of the Chiefs organization. Got back to the Super Bowl. He, of course, was on the championship-winning team last year and part of the AFC champion Chiefs this time around. So, again, congrats, Shelton Quarles and Keyshawn Vaughn, members of the Super Bowl 55 champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. When we come back, Coach Jerry Stackhouse will be our guest. And we remind you, our show is brought to you by Gupton Jeep. Gupton Jeep is your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters. Been serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. This is Commodore Hour. We welcome you back. I'm Kevin Ingram. We remind you our show is brought to you in part by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Education Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. Time to visit with Coach Jerry Stackhouse. Jerry's team, of course, off a tough loss at Georgia, as I mentioned, back on Saturday, and getting ready to face Auburn tomorrow night over at Memorial Gym. We'll talk some hoops. Also going to get into some football here as part one with Coach Stackhouse. Joined by Jerry Stackhouse as Vanderbilt plays Auburn this week. But before we talk basketball, let's get to the important stuff. Are you and Rasheed still on speaking terms after last night's Super Bowl beat down by the Bucks?
Man, I feel for my man today. I know he's getting it, boy. He was already having Super Bowl celebrations and everything, and all that got canceled. So the GOAT, man, that's all I can say, the GOAT.
You're talking about Tom Brady. He's really remarkable. The 7th Super Bowl at age 43.
Oh, man, it was unbelievable. It was just like, you never bet against experience, man. I know all that talent that's over there on that, you know, that Kansas City side, man. But it's just, man, it just looked like they, you know, Ty Bowles too, man. Man, yeah. Unbelievable how he was able to shut them down. But, man, just watching that guy do what he does, you know, pick him apart, It was beautiful.
Make you want to step back out there and play some more hoops?
No, not quite. You know, I feel for him. I'm living vicariously through the GOAT. You know, I can just stick to jumping into a little dummy offense every once in a while and playing some shell drill. That way, I don't have to play on the defensive side. He's lucky. He only gets to play offense. Right. He hasn't had to do anything on the defensive side.
Yeah, he's come on off to the sideline. Going back to Saturday to the Georgia game, a little hard to shake off. One that was close, and the guys had a chance to win there at the end.
Yeah, man, I just think we did a lot of good things, man. I think we're, we got to learn how to win those games. I think that's one of those things where we're playing more consistently now. We're giving ourselves a chance to be in the games. They're late because we're executing, both sides of the ball pretty good. Still not as well as we like, but we're giving ourselves a chance. And now it's just, things that we got to do. I mean, just being a little sharper there at the end, making sure things that we talked about, going to the basket, gathering off two and not launching, gives ourselves an opportunity to get the benefit of the doubt more so than often. But I think, it was pretty good. I mean, we did some things as far as being active defensively that were some, positive signs of where we want to go. I mean, it's like I think they gave me a stat or something where we hadn't had that many steals, in probably 15 years or something, something crazy. But it was it's just know that our guys are active. And once we just, lock in on a few things and, execute a little bit better down the stretch, I think we're doing some good things.
You did force 21 turnovers, turn those into 29 points. I mean, you'll take that every game, won't you?
Yeah, man, it was just, again, like, it's crazy. I mean, we do all those things, and you don't come out on top, and it takes some Herculean efforts, I'm still saying that first half, team shoots 7 for 7 from three between two guys. It's just, it's tough to overcome. And, especially when, that's a 50, that's a 50% shot at best. I mean, the best guys in the business do it at 40%. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just, I think our luck will turn. We got to make our luck a little bit more. I think there's some things where we contested those shots. We could contest them a little bit harder. It was some type of little mental breakdown to why they were able to get some of those clean looks. So those are things that we talked about yesterday in a film session. And hopefully we can, get back to work today and get ready for tomorrow.
A positive sign that this team was right there on the road in a game where Scotty only scored 12, and you got some good balance, though, and some additional scores.
I think when the ball moves, that's what we want. I mean, we got guys that we feel that can make shots, and, if it's the right shots. And I think that's where we want, got to, lose some of those possessions where we, we want to play quick, we want to play in transition, but if there's nothing there, just to kind of settle it down and run our, half-court offense. We're pretty good when we do that. So let's not have careless turnovers and, just when there's really nothing there. I mean, we want to definitely want to probe and see what's there in transition once we play good defense and rebound or get a steal. But we got to make sure that we still, especially, I think Scotty, that's his next progression of just, okay, let me just put the throttle on a little bit, get everybody settled and make sure that we get something good. And I think that's, those are the things that we have to do more during the course of the game, and obviously, be able to slow the game down there and in the end. I mean, I've kicked myself too because I called a timeout to try to go full and get something without them getting set. And then with it being 1-point game, I'm going to have some timeout. So
yeah.
and there could have been an opportunity there to use one to really get something, concrete to know exactly where we want to go. So, I think it's just a learning experience of knowing our guys. Maybe we need to micromanage them a little bit more down the stretch as opposed to just, saying, okay, we know we can get this advantage quick and kind of see what happens. Just making sure that we tailor make that a little bit more. And I think that's where this group is growing. I mean, we went from all of a sudden battling back and hopefully being in games. And now our concern is making sure that we, execute and do the things that we need to at the end. So I think that shows some growth and we got some time to continue to figure it out. Really starting to really figure out who needs to be playing. Finally got a full complement of guys and can kind of see how things blend together. Maxwell Evans has emerged again. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's some cool things for us right now, and just trying to figure out how to fit it all together.
I thought Jordan Wright played one of his best games, and you'll see 12 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists. But I thought he did some good things on both ends of the court. He had 3 steals, made some things happen. What did you think about his performance?
Yeah, I mean, Jordan was really good, man. I think he's one of those guys that we could really – probably one of the few guys that we could just say individually defense can guard his man. He can guard, you know, multiple positions. He can play up to bigger guys. But he can guard point guards. He can switch off, and we feel comfortable about him. You know, moving his feet, and, you know, he got his hands on some balls. He was really active, you know, not just in the steals that he got, but in some deflections. So I think, you know, and then offensively, you know, when he gets in the paint again and gathers and takes his time, you know, he's a tough cover. When he goes in there and he's throwing one-handers, it's not as good. Yeah. So, but those are the things that we, again, and I think a lot of times we get in the paint, and we just got to read, you know, see what's happening there. And if, you know, I beat my guy and there's somebody there, where is he? And I think just those little subtleties, we missed a few, I think, some good looks at 3 because we just kind of got rushed a little bit there in the paint. But Jordan's growing on both ends of the floor. He's a competitor. And, I mean, that's what we want. Guys out there is just going to compete. You know, they're not going to go well for him. They're not going to shots. He's not going to defensive assignment. But if you do it hard and really compete, then, you know, it works out more times than not. So,
is he a guy you also have to remind to use his big body to his advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I think I love when he's banging people. You know, when he's going to the basket, and I'm almost upset when I see him going there with some finesse layup when I just want him to hit somebody and finish, you know, and finish it. He has the ability to do that. I think he should be an and-one type of guy, thinking more from that standpoint, because he's, you know, he has a good feel too. I mean, if I think his defense is curt, you know, kind of shrink down on him, he can make the right play. I mean, he knows where guys are on the floor. He has a good understanding of what we're trying to get accomplished. So, you know, it's good. And can get to the free throw line. So,
sure.
I think – I still feel like he's leaving something out on the table for us. I mean, you look up and he's had 8 or 10. I mean, I really think he should be a 14 to 16 point guy that we can really rely on every night.
Our guest is Coach Jerry Stackhouse. This is Commodore Hour. We're going to have more coming up in just a moment. Welcome back to Commodore Hour, visiting with Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse. Auburn will be the opponent on Tuesday night. And, you know, Jerry, you look at Auburn, they're sort of a similar team to Georgia in some ways. I mean, they have the great point guard in Sharif Cooper, who's so hard to keep in front of you, great at scoring, great at setting up others. What stands out about the Tigers?
Well, yeah, I think they're a team that kind of goes as, you know, Sharif Cooper goes. Again, he has the ball a lot of usage with them. He's great. Great passer. I mean, he can shoot it. I mean, he can score at the basket. So, I mean, we got our hands full with him. You know, they're long. They're one of the best shot-blocking teams in the country. So, we have to go in and have a plan as we attack the basket. So, you know, we definitely, you know, I know they've, you know, struggled a little bit here of late. But we are definitely aware that they're a team that, you know, presents a ton of problems for us. Different areas, but, you know, if we're sound and we stick to our principles and our coverages, then I feel like we'd be fine.
They shoot a lot of threes. Are they also a team, though, you might be able to take advantage of some turnovers in an up-tempo game?
Well, yeah, I think we can run selectively. We can get back, get out, and kind of maybe do some things in transition with them, with some of our ball screens. I mean, they got some young guys, and kind of take some time and understand and learning how to really negotiate and navigate ball screens. So maybe we could take advantage of some opportunities there. But again, they like to get out themselves. We got to make sure that our transition defense is up to par. I mean, Cooper, I think he's one of the best guards that I've seen is allowing the hockey assist. I mean, he really gets off of it early and let other guys make plays. I feel like he has a high number of assists. You know, he probably could even be higher if you think about the hockey assist that he has by just getting off the ball early, getting up, you know, hit-aheads and allowing his athletes to be athletes. So he's really good at that.
used the 1-3-1 zone we were noticing quite a bit at Georgia the other night. How did you feel like that went?
It was really new, something. I mean, we're more of a kind of a matchup out of our 2-3. A lot of people think it's a 1-3-1 zone, but we really went to more of a traditional 1-3-1 just to try to stay in front of the ball. We just had some things that we talked about responsibilities within that zone, and we made some mental errors there, and it cost us. It got some deep threes in the corner, but I mean, those are things that we are aware of and got to be able to take away. And like I said, I mean, you kind of in the zone, you gamble a little bit and try to, you know, hope the long shot doesn't beat you. And then, like I said, they go 7-for-7. So suffice it to say, not going to see much 1-3-1 zone the rest of that game. But I think it's definitely another tool that we got in the box to try to definitely slow down some of these really, quick point guards to where there's a body in front of them most of the time.
Do you really have to be disciplined in playing that 1-3-1 versus maybe the other zones just to cover the baseline especially?
Yeah, it's just this. I just think when you're on those wings, even though you want to make it look crowded to just maybe above the free throw line, your responsibility is the corner. So it's almost like I got to get, as I'm closing out up top, I still got to drop back more to that corner, knowing that it's my responsibility as well, making sure that a pass is a hang time that allows you to kind of get there on air time, or a bounce pass, which again allows you to get there on the airtime of those passes. So, but it's just things that we drill, and I think they have a better feel for it in our fist and in our normal two matchup zone. But it was just and when you go back and look at it, it was just a little bit of fatigue. Think the guys that were in those shield positions at the time that they got those threes was tired, and I had somebody at the bench for them, and they just missed this thing. But that's a good thing. I mean, it's that we're playing hard. It was really, really, really good. I think probably one of my favorite moments of that game, even though we didn't win the game, was late in the game. I think Trey had missed a couple of threes, and I mean, I heard Dylan over there telling, man, you're going to make the next one. You're going to make the next one. And I mean, that just lets me know these guys are pulling for each other, and the next thing he comes right out there and makes that next one. So it's like, that gives me a little chill on the inside. That lets us know we're getting to where we need to go. They're pulling for each other, and like I said, the wins will come if we keep doing those things.
Yeah, I noticed Dylan being vocal on defense too. What did you like most about his game, especially in the second half, where it seemed like at times he was the best player out there?
Yeah, I mean, he was dominant. I mean, he got the ball in the post, got it in his spots. When we posted him a little bit, he turned, he made shots. Shots that he didn't take, he went in the offensive rebound and gave us second chance opportunities. He was all over the place defensively. He was getting at his teammates for not the defense the way that they should, doing the things that they know how to do. And then we talked about it, with him. Just making sure that he does that in the right way. I want him to have that leadership, but it's not about shooting guys up or anything like that. So, him finding that balance, because sometimes he's kind of like me from that standpoint. He talks hard to him, but at the same time, it's coming from a good place.
Right.
But that was just from that just until how he was in that huddle, just lets you know that he's about the right stuff. And, We just got to find a way to continue more opportunities. I think he lets it come to him when he drives. He's looking for his teammates, and we got to make sure when we're driving and doing everything that he's a guy that we're trying to find at the end of plays, because he's really confident right now shooting the ball. He's confident putting it on the floor, doing some things, and none of that has affected his defense. He still grays out as one of our better defenders night in and night out. So we got to just keep doing what he's doing.
This overall has been a good free throw shooting team. Maybe not quite as good as normal at Georgia, but are you liking the amounts of chances you're getting at the foul line every game?
We're getting there. It means we're getting our feet in the paint. We're doing some smart things at the basket. Now we just got to convert. I mean, we've been a pretty good free throw shooting team, but we left some money on the table in that game, especially when it's a 3-point game. We missed 6 free throws in the first half. Those little things come back to haunt you. But so we just got to continue to go up there with confidence and, you know, knock them down, especially front end of one and one. Those kill you. You get their opportunity to put a couple points on the board and you get nothing. So, you know, just a focus thing and then continue to get there. But still, I think our thing is just getting in the paint. If there's an opportunity for me to get and finish, absolutely. But if not, let's get the ball moving. We can't watch, you know, bad possessions of, you know, just, you know, one-on-one basketball. That's not who we are. We got to get the ball moving, try to find the open man. When we do that, and like I said, it's still that number of, you know, 11 to 12 threes. We only were 9 last game. So it's like, you know, just getting to that number is going to help us, you know, get across the finish line.
No matter how many games I watch this season with a different setup of the bench area and the look of the arenas, everything spread out, it's weird. Is it that way for you as a coach?
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, it's a little bit different, just the atmosphere. But, you know, when you're in between the lines and you're just kind of watching what's going on, you know, in between those lines, I kind of lost in that, yeah. You know, with the officials and trying to, you know, stay on top of them. You know, and, you know, different things that happened in the game. I mean, I went back and watched that last possession where they got fouled. You know, that guy was standing in the lane for 7 seconds, literally 7 seconds on the clock. So it's just like those things that we got to get better at. You know, I mean, I think we playing defense, doing all those things. Those are the type of breaks that you need when you're doing things right. You know, and obviously we, you know, guys competed all the way, had an opportunity, but man, some of those little things can be the difference in wins and losses. So, but like I said, just in between the lines, everything kind of feels the same. But definitely, we're ready for the fans to get back, for sure.
No doubt about that. One more for you, Jerry. Any real feel for when or if the games that have been postponed might be made up as we get into the last weeks of the season here?
No, I haven't heard anything from that yet. I mean, I know you know, Trace and those folks of Andy. They'll be working to try to see if we can get those games with Dan Levis and those guys at the league office. But as of right now, you know, there's been nothing concrete about it or how they're going to go about that.
Jerry, thank you as always, and good luck against Auburn tomorrow night.
Okay, man. Appreciate it. Thanks, man. Bye.
Vanderbilt coach Jerry Stackhouse, our guest here on Commodore Hour. And, of course, Vanderbilt plays Auburn tomorrow night, 7:30 over Memorial Gym, pregame at 7 o'clock. When we come back, we'll have sophomore forward Dylan DeSue join us, the second leading rebounder in the SEC. He has 7 straight double-figure games, including 15 points, 6 boards, and 3 blocks against Georgia back on Saturday. So we'll check in with Dylan when we come back. Don't go away. More of Commodore Hour coming up. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour on a Monday night in the Music City. Great to have you with us. I'm Kevin Ingram. Before we hear from Dylan DeSue, let's check in on some Commodores in the NBA, including Darius Garland of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Last time out, lost to the Bucks, 124-99 on Saturday. He had 17 points and 9 assists in 34 minutes, averaging 16 points, 2 rebounds, and 5 assists in 16 games, shooting 40% from 3 and 87% from the foul line. So Darius having a nice season. Aaron Nesmith of the Boston Celtics didn't play against the Suns yesterday. Phoenix won that game 100-91. Aaron has played in 9 games, averaging 3 points per game. Damian Jones did play against Boston on Sunday. 9 minutes, 2 blocks in a 100-91 win for Phoenix. He's played 8 games this season, just 3 in the last week, in 15 minutes against Detroit back on Friday. Saben Lee, 6 minutes, 4 points, and a double overtime loss to the Lakers on Saturday, 135-129. In 7 games, averaging 9 minutes per game, played 9 minutes in the loss at Phoenix on Friday. And Luke Kornet made his second appearance of the season on Saturday for the Bulls in their win against Orlando. So good to see Luke back out on the court, keeping you up to date on Commodores in the NBA. Might see this guy in the NBA sometime soon. Sophomore forward Dylan DeSue out of Pflugerville, Texas, our guest on Commodore Hour.
We are joined by Vanderbilt sophomore Dylan DeSue off a terrific game at Georgia. And, Dylan, you kind of look back at that game on Saturday. Was that one a tough one to take with so many good things that happened and really have that chance to win at the end?
Yeah, it was tough. We really wanted to get a second in a row. We feel like we have a good stretch of games here where we could get a couple under our belt and really make some noise during SEC play. So we really wanted to get that one, obviously.
How much is it a learning experience just to be in those spots at the end where you have to execute and make something happen and, you know, get that big bucket to try to win a game?
Yeah, I think it does a lot for us, just like being in those late game situations. Obviously, like you said, like learning how to execute and just learning how to win games at the end of the game when it's close like that will be big for us in the near future as well as possibly into next year.
What'd you like about your team's defense? You had 29 points off turnovers, got 15 steals. A lot of things went really well on that end of the court, didn't they?
We forced a lot of turnovers. Looking back on the game yesterday, Coach Stack was very happy with the amount of turnovers we forced. Some of our execution wasn't really that great defensively, but somehow we still forced that many turnovers, which is good. I think it helped us turn it into offense really quickly. I think we had, you said, 29 points off turnovers, something like that.
Yeah,
so it really helped us offensively being able to score and got us back in the game, especially when Maxwell hit that 1-3 to tie it up at 68-68. So that's just like one example of like us being able to turn our defense into quick offense.
There's a stretch there. You got a couple offensive rebounds and putbacks, hit a couple in the paint. You kind of get in that flow of the game where you're feeling it?
Yeah, I just was playing, trying to play as hard as I could, get us back in the game, or just keep us in the game. I think we went down a little bit. I think we were down maybe six or so. I just kept playing hard, and things worked out for me.
Coach Stackhouse was talking about you being vocal with your teammates too, you know, encouraging Trey to keep shooting. Or I noticed you also, defensively telling some guys, hey, here's where you need to be or what you need to be doing right there. How much more of that do you feel second year in the program and, you know, and as one of the guys who's played a lot on this team?
I think it's important. Trey missed a three kind of badly, and he was kind of, we were in last media timeout huddle. And I think I could tell, like, he was thinking about it, and I was just like, don't worry about it. Like, you're going to make the next three. We're not worried about it. We've forgotten about it. Everyone that's watching this on TV has forgotten about it. Like, it's not the next play. And you see, like, a couple minutes later, he hits a big three to bring us within 65-68. So I think just, like, encouraging teammates both on offense and defense just to keep playing and getting guys in the right positions both on offense and defense is big for me this year because – I think, yeah, like I have me and Scotty have some minutes on the team, like going back to last year.
When you have to sit out a stretch in the first half with fouls, is there the temptation to come back in the second half and almost try to do too much to make up for lost time?
It was tough having to sit out the last 4 minutes, but I just came into the second half, like I have to be aggressive, but also smart at the same time. I didn't want to force anything or like, play overly aggressive and get a foul early in that second half and have to sit out again. So it was like kind of a balance of just being aggressive but like being smart.
Your shooting stroke from three looks great. How much of that is a product of just a lot of work in the gym?
Yeah, I think I talked to someone else about this, but like I just went into the offseason, went into work on my shot a lot, my shot prep, being ready to shoot at all times, and being more efficient than last year, and I think it's helped a lot.
Visiting with Dylan Dessou, what all did you also learn from year one to year two about having your body ready to play in the SEC, and how have you gone about that?
Last year I kind of had to be thrown in at the five because of injuries, and it was tough for me. Being probably underweight to be playing at five. I think I was playing at like 205 last year, and now I'm playing at 225. So I just went into the offseason trying to put on some weight so I could be able to handle the extensive minutes at the playing with those bigger guys at down low.
Rebounding is such an effort thing, but also anticipation and knowing the angles and all that stuff. How have you improved in that area?
I think I've always been a pretty good rebounder, even back to high school. So I think it's just like being able to like put myself in positions, like being stronger and getting guys, pushing guys further under the rim, being able to create, space myself to get the rebounds was really what helped. It's helping me this year to get more rebounds than I was last year.
What's been the biggest challenge about this season? You know, with so many games postponed and just so much uncertainty about how it's going to go with the COVID situation, what has it been like for you guys?
Yeah, I think it's just inconsistency is really tough. You know, like we came off the win against South Carolina. Everyone has a lot of energy. We're really excited to go get another win at Texas A&M, seeing as how like they're struggling as of late. And we think that we thought we could really go get a big win and get a second in a row, and then the game gets canceled. So I think like inconsistency really makes it tough. It's just like being able to like lock in like every week, despite whether there be cancellations or like somebody has to miss practice and quarantine. So I think just like this ups and downs, you know, with COVID.
Is it hard and just different with the fans not being like they normally are, and you have to sort of bring your own energy at times?
I think at the beginning of the season, we kind of struggled with that, with no fans. But I think the bench has done a really good job as of late. Coach Tech really preached to them, like, earlier in the season, probably, like, I think it was after the Florida game, like, the bench has to be more involved. And since then, they've done exactly that. Like, everyone's standing up, cheering, chanting defense, like, talking. So I think as the season's gone on, the bench has definitely created more energy. And I think that that's why you see, like, we're able to have energy in game and play well early.
Has your family been able to get up here and see you play, or just keep track from a distance?
My family was supposed to has been here, I think, twice. I live in Texas, so
yeah.
Going back to Texas A&M, I had a lot of people come to that game, but they got canceled, so it is what it is.
Auburn is next. They're a really athletic team. They shoot a lot of threes. Sharif Cooper has just been terrific. What's most challenging about trying to deal with those guys?
I think having played Sevier Wheeler this weekend, it gives us like a lot of what we're going to see tomorrow, because I think they played not exactly the same, but like they have similar philosophies to like draw to and dish to somebody else and creating for teammates. So I think that our last game really helped us prepare for this game. As for like athleticism, I think that we'll be okay. As long as we rebound, we'll be all right.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you think?
I was going for Patrick Mahomes, man. They just couldn't protect my guy. The line really let me down.
Now, do you think you'll still be balling at age 43 like Tom Brady?
I don't know. Age 40s, that's a lot of years, a lot of miles. Hopefully, lucky.
Now, are you a Cowboys or a Texans fan?
I'm a Cowboys fan.
Any temptation for the Texans or no? Is it just straight Dallas?
No. The Texans are awful. It's straight Dallas.
Dylan, appreciate the time. Fun to visit with you, and good luck tomorrow night against Auburn. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
That's sophomore forward Dylan DeSue out of Pflugerville, Texas, telling us he's a Cowboys fan and was pulling for the Chiefs last night. So fun to visit with Dylan, and, man, he's just having an outstanding sophomore year. Among the leaders in rebounds in the SEC at 8.2 and shooting threes, and there was a stretch in that Georgia game where he was the best player on the floor, I thought, in the second half. So good to visit with Dylan, and we'll see him back on the court tomorrow night as Vanderbilt and Auburn square off at 7:30 over at Memorial Gym. We will take a break. When we come back, James Thrillkill will join us, a Vanderbilt football alum from the 70s. He is an artist and has been for a long time here in Nashville. Really interesting guy, so looking forward to visiting with James. It's coming up next. This is Commodore Hour. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour on this Monday night in Nashville. Great to have you with us. I'm Kevin Ingram. Our next guest is a Vanderbilt football alum and really one of the most interesting people you'll speak with here in the Music City. He is an East Nashville native. Of course, as I mentioned, played football and has been an artist for many, many years. He is James Thrillkill, and he joins us now. James, how are you doing this evening?
Kevin, I'm doing great. It's good to talk to you tonight.
Absolutely. You know, when you think back about your athletic career and playing at Vanderbilt, and now these days, you know, talking to maybe your former teammates or other athletes who played at Vandy, what do you like about the mission of a group like the Black and Gold Club and getting people a way to connect?
Well, I like the fact that it works to keep former players engaged with the university. One of the things I had the benefit of when I came in, actually being recruited by Bill Parcells in 1974, is that I came in with an incredible freshman class that included people like Dennis Harrison, Kimmy Weaver, and a lot of other great players. And then they also had people like Brenard Wilson and later on Preston Brown, players who all went on to play professional. But also a teammate of mine was David Culley from Sparta, Tennessee, who's now the head coach of the Houston Texans. And so I think with the Black and Gold Club, just connecting former players with current players, it gives them an opportunity to kind of bridge that gap of experience to kind of give the current players a foundation and especially an understanding of some of the history that took place back when a lot of the African-American players were playing in the early 70s at Vandy. And that's really important to just understand that legacy and what former players did to paved the way for the current players that are there now.
What was Bill Parcells like back then? He was a much younger guy than what we remember a lot of his coaching career.
Man, Coach Parcells was one of the toughest individuals that I ever experienced, man. He was a fierce coach, but he was a great motivator, and players loved to play for him. But, I mean, he was a competitor. I remember one time in practice, he was, of course, on the defensive end, and he got upset about something. And so he went around the helmet, went around the huddle of defensive players, smacking every player in the face mask. And so we were all looking like, okay, when he gets to 6'8", Dennis Harrison, we know he's probably going to stop there. But he started smacking. He raised up to smack Dennis and came back down to smack the rest of the players. And that's when we knew he didn't take no stuff.
Hey, you're probably glad you're over on.
I was glad I was on the offensive side. But
right.
He told one little short running back who was going against the first team defense. He looked at this little poor player and said, after practice, you're going to be extinct like the dodo bird. I mean, it was so funny. He didn't show no mercy for whoever was going up against his defense. But that's why they were some tough competitors in 1974 when we had a great season and went to the Peach Bowl and ended up tying Texas Tech. And freshman Dennis Harrison was actually the defensive most valuable player of the game.
James, how special is it to see David Culley, finally get that chance to be an NFL head coach?
It is so special because we knew that David Culley was an excellent coach. After his playing days at Vanderbilt, of course, he coached receivers at Vandy, and then we kind of kept up with his career as he coached at Philadelphia and Kansas City and Buffalo, and we always knew him to be an excellent teacher, but also a great leader of men. And I always wondered when the coaching cycles came up why David Culley's name never came up as a potential candidate. And so when we found out that he was going to be selected as the next coach of the Texans, we were absolutely delighted because we felt like it was long overdue, and we feel like he's an excellent choice to lead that franchise.
Our guest is James Threlkill, Vanderbilt football alum and longtime artist here in his hometown of Nashville. This is Black History Month. How rewarding is it to know how you've inspired people over the years?
Well, I, of course, understand history and the importance of it, and individuals like Jackie Robinson and players like Joe Gillum from Tennessee State University and others who kind of paved the way and made the sacrifices for those of us who came along later. But the thing that makes me proud is that we continued a legacy of greatness in terms of just really paving the way for a lot of the younger players who are now playing in this day and time. And, of course, when we were playing back in the 70s, there were some difficult scenarios. Everybody was kind of aware of the situation that Perry Wallace faced when he was going down in the Deep South and playing against teams. But he persevered and really became a strong symbol of perseverance and strength. And so, even when we were playing, there were certain things attached to, a black quarterback being intelligent enough to play the position. And, of course, we were familiar with the things that Joe Gillum endured at Pittsburgh. And so Right. Now when you look at what's going on in the league with players like Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson and a lot of the other players, you're just, really happy to see individuals get those kind of opportunities just to demonstrate that they're just as capable of anybody else in terms of making a difference and showing their abilities. And I'm just continuing to hope that with situations like David Culley being named a coach, that other opportunities for deserving individuals like Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles and others will get those opportunities to demonstrate their capabilities.
How did you feel such a connection with former Titan Eddie George?
When Eddie came to town, I was actually working in the mayor's office for Mayor Phil Bredesen. And so I was actually involved with selecting the company to build the Titan Stadium. And so I actually got a chance to meet Eddie because I was hired to do an art project for his home by his interior decorator. And I just found out what a quality individual he was. I, of course, saw his success at Ohio State and thought he was an excellent athlete. But, you know, in spite of his phenomenal success, I think the caliber of person that he is the thing that stood out to me. And so I was always happy to run into him, and, you know, he treated me and others with respect in spite of his success. And that's what makes him a great individual, but also a very talented individual, because when you look at what he's done post-football career with the acting stints that he's had and the things that he's done on Broadway, I'm just really proud of how he has continued to move forward and to demonstrate that, you know, that undeserved label of the dumb jock keeps getting shot down by individuals like Eddie, who demonstrate that they have the ability to move on from sports and to still do exciting things with their skills and talents.
Yeah, he's a special guy, no question. Now, James, you've done everything from children's books to an Emmy Award-winning mural project. I got to think you take something different from each of those experiences, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely, and especially in the case, Kevin, with the Emmy Award, because I was working in the Edge Hill community, which was a public housing community that I actually grew up in. And so when I graduated from Vanderbilt, I had an opportunity to go back into several of the public housing communities that I had grown up in Nashville to conduct neighborhood art classes. And so when I got to the Edge Hill community, I started conducting art classes to give kids in the neighborhood an opportunity to participate in some constructive activities. And so we were asked to do a mural for the Viacom Television Network, and they submitted it to the Television Arts and Sciences Academy and actually ended up nominating us for an Emmy that we won. And so the thing that it demonstrated to not only me but the kids I was working with, that even though they were living in the public housing community like I grew up in, there were no limitations on what they could achieve. And that was huge in terms of sending that kind of message to young people who normally were told that because of their, you know, status in society in terms of their income or community that they lived in, that they were not deserving of success. So that helped me reinforce important messages to kids who are now working for the U.S. Army over in Germany. They're teachers and doing a lot of constructive things that, you know, I feel like I had a small role in helping them to understand that they had a broader horizon of things that they could achieve in their lives. So that by far was one of the most phenomenal moments that I had an opportunity to experience. And then also because of that success, I was invited to South Africa to do a mural project in Soweto and got a chance to meet and visit with Nelson Mandela while I was there. So that was an incredible moment as well. So, you know, being an artist who grew up in the J.C. Napier public housing community, it was my first grade teacher who told my mom that I was drawing in class all day. And that alerted my mom to just making sure that I had materials and all the other things that I needed to continue to develop my talent as an artist. And so art has taken me all over the world, and I'm excited to be able to use it to inspire young people to excel in not only art, but whatever skills and talents that they may have.
That's super cool. James, one more for you. You know, growing up around here and a great player at East Nashville High School, could you have imagined what that area and this town would look like, say, you know, back in the 1970s?
No, I really didn't envision that happening, because being a person that was interested in art, I always felt like I had to move away to pursue a career as an artist, because Nashville was kind of slow in terms of being a full-time artist. But artists started to come together and collaborate, and it really made a difference in terms of the growth of the creative arts community. But when you look at just all the other resources that people have brought to our city, that has made us a more sophisticated and exciting place to live. I never would have envisioned Nashville growing to that level. So I'm excited about that. But I have to mention, Kevin, I actually ran into you when you did a remote at Champions Run Golf Course.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
my
remember.
Daughter played golf for Rockville, but I really appreciated you and Blaine taking the time to take photos with her. And I'm still a big fan of your impersonations, and especially the one you do of Mike Krzyzewski and Coach Belichick. So I had to get that in, man. Those are two of my absolute favorites, and you're one of the best I've heard.
Coach K is a fantastic basketball coach, James.
That's spot on, man. I'm telling you. I love it every time you do it. But I want to say that there are many, you know, former Vandy athletes that are here in town and really interested in continuing to work with the university and the Black and Gold Club. And so we're looking forward to, you know, those kind of opportunities to really share our experiences with the young generation that's coming along in this day and time.
James, it's great to visit with you. Thanks for the time. Have a good night.
Kevin, my pleasure. Always a pleasure talking to you. Take care, my friend.
All right, you too. That's James Threlkill. He played football for Vanderbilt back in the 70s and these days, and for a long time, an award-winning artist in this area. We're going to come back and wrap things up in a moment. This is Commodore Hour. We'll continue after this. Welcome back to Commodore Hour, wrapping things up on this Monday night and remembering David Williams with his passing 2 years ago today, the vice chancellor and athletic director and a man that is most respected and thought of often by a lot of folks around Vanderbilt Athletics. So some very nice tributes for David Williams today. Among Clark Lee's football hires announced today, former All-SEC receiver, NFL player, and Vanderbilt Hall of Famer Earl Bennett as director of player development. So that was cool. And Kayleen Curry as director of mental performance. Congratulations to Ian Duvenhage, the longtime Vanderbilt tennis coach, on career win number 200 back on Saturday as the Commodores defeated Lipscomb. Both tennis teams off to unbeaten start. The men's team at 3-0 and the women's team ranked number 15 and 6-0 with back-to-back 7-0 wins over the weekend. We will wrap it up for now and say so long. This is Commodore Hour. Thanks to Steve Goldberg, our producer, and Max Herz, of course. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Have a good evening.